Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We've been going on a recording spree. We got another cool guest sitting on the other side of our Zoom. Amanda's sitting on the couch and I'm coughing my face off.
Hey everyone, it's Amanda. And yes, we have been on a recording spree. Maybe that's why my voice sounds like this. Nobody knows. I'm kind of getting used to this raspiness now. I think this is just my new thing. This is my new style. I'm going with it. We've got Christina on the other side of our Zoom, all the way from California. She's a massage therapist, has been practicing over 20 years. And a large majority of her practice these days is working with what she described as an underserved population of people who have received plastic surgery. Mm. We had somebody else on our couch not too long ago, Jessica, who focuses on this type of work here in Ontario. And Christina contacted us because she said she's the only one in her area that does this kind of thing. And what makes her unique is she actually wrote a book. It's sitting behind her. And I mean, I'm far from the screen, Christina, but like, is that a peach on the cover of that book?
Yeah, it's an emoji of a peach.
That is indeed a peach. And we all know what the peach emoji is. Guys,
what is the peach emoji? Tell me.
You know what the peach emoji is. Come on, don't make me say it. Eggplant.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so Christina, why don't you, for everybody listening, introduce yourself, how you got into the great profession of massage therapy, and sort of your career trajectory and where it has taken you over the last 20 years, 20 plus years.
Goodness, we're going to go that far back? Okay.
I've got all day.
No problem. So, before I was a massage therapist, I was an actor and a dancer, and I did some directing, and I was in Los Angeles. And so I studied at Loyola Marymount University for a dance ethnology major and a theater major as well. I went to the British American Drama Academy at Oxford, UK. Within that time, came back, and then I had a major injury, you know, that really hurt my chances of being a dancer, which really, really made me sad. I did mostly modern dance, really, really angsty artistic work, you know, staying more clear away from the commercial side of things. And
Pause you a second? Because we just had a discussion the other day with another guest about dancing. And we were talking about, because Mark and I both did kinesiology degrees here in Ontario. And when you take kinesiology, there's a certain number of practical components to it. So you have to do like a water sport, a team sport, an individual, some sort of movement, a racket sport. So we both decided to do dance. So he took something practical.
Well, I had to do a movement.
He did a practical course. He took ballroom dancing.
I didn't have many choices. I had ballroom or country line.
I used to compete in ballroom dancing when I was younger.
Well, he did ballroom. And it's funny when you're like, I did modern, like staying away from like the, you know, the mainstream kind of thing. I chose modern. And you want to know why I did? Because I am the least graceful person I know. And somebody once, I know, I am the least graceful person. And somebody said to me, the great thing about modern is it's not always looking for the clean lines and the perfect points. And somebody described it to me as like the ugly ballet. I'm like, I can get on board with that. I can do that.
Modern is really interesting because it explores movement. It doesn't explore beauty.
Yes.
It explores movement through the potential space that your body makes. Did you know, actually, funny enough, that there was a lot of, you know, the things that we took when we were in school. Like, did you ever get a chance to learn about something called Laban movement notation?
No.
The only way I can describe it is it's basically a form of movement notation that's all in symbols. And every little jot and tittle represents something in the movement. So from that, you can learn about the psycho-emotional understanding of any person, not just the dancer, not just the dance itself. And you can re-translate that into different ways. And so what we learned from that interesting perspective is that your whole body has the potential at any given moment to move within a dodecahedron. That's pretty big. So your movement potential, just standing there with your arms going and legs going different directions, taking one step in any direction, it's a pretty large potential space. So you start to realize the space that you're allowed to take up that's biologically adherent to your right to exist is pretty large. So it was a really, really beautiful time where I got to learn these really interesting concepts back then. Hmm. I used to also do a little bit of, you know, ballroom dancing and Latin ballroom. I was on the formation team there, which we were very basic bronze level. Like, we weren't like huge competitors. It was just something, a childhood dream. And I actually competed in swing dancing for a little bit. I've been a swing dancer for 20 years. and I got into it then. And in the LA scene, that's where, you know, you're looking at the second generation of people who brought it back during the 1990 revival. Right. So a lot of these original dancers from these big movies were still alive back then, teaching courses and classes and workshops. So it was a beautiful, beautiful time in my life. And probably the most fun I ever had in my entire life. I went out dancing every night of the week and on top of a dance major and a theater major. But anyway, I had gotten hurt. I required a hip surgery at 21 years old. And it forced me to be on crutches for over a year, even though I was finishing my dance ethnology degree. And
that's like the saddest story I've ever heard. She just finished saying she was out dancing mm-hmm. every night of the week. She's a dance major. And now you've got to have a hip replacement at 21 and be on crutches for over a year and you can't dance. Like, that's the saddest story I've ever heard.
It wasn't a replacement, I promise you. It was an orthoscopic surgery. So it was actually really good afterwards. But I knew I wasn't going to be a professional dancer. I was too big. I was too heavy. I was too thick. It was just never going to happen for me down in the Los Angeles scene. And I also didn't want to do it as a career. I just always loved to dance. I never really had the chance to growing up. So I took the major to just finally live that childhood dream, which was really, really amazing. So I was okay, I promise. But the only time I was not in pain, believe it or not, was when I went out swing dancing, because you're in a crouched position and you're activating all your muscles. So my hip was actually supported. So when I wasn't dancing, instantaneously I'd be in pain and I'd have to sit down or be on crutches. Or I was wheeled through Disneyland in a wheelchair, because we used to go dancing every Friday night at Disneyland because they had a big band there at the Carnation Plaza. Mm-hmm. So we would have all these season passes and we'd go. Back then they were affordable. They were like $35 a ticket. Now it's like it costs you an entire house just to go to Disneyland with your family. but I was very active in that. And so anyway, when I got hurt, I knew I was going to have surgery after graduation at some point. It was, my parents live in Northern California between San Francisco and Sacramento. So we're talking like a 6-hour drive between Los Angeles and there. So anyway, I knew I was going to have to relocate. But at the middle part of my senior year, one student that I went to school with, who's also a bigger girl, she was taller, she was obese, but she always wanted to dance. She said, screw it, I'm going to dance. I'm going to dance my little heart out and I'm going to take a dance major along with my history major. So we weren't close by any means, but she was a doll face and was very inspiring. In fact, not long ago, I actually reached out to her on Facebook and told her, you really inspired a lot of my career and you don't even know that you changed my life. But she said, hey, I'm going to massage school at night. You should come with me. And I didn't even think about that decision. I just went, okay. And so I went and I had no intention of being anything, but I was so focused on, as you were bringing up, kinesiology, because we were taking some advanced kinesiology courses as part of our major. I was really fascinated that like every little muscle and tendon has a name and each of those names actually directs you to where it starts and where it ends in the body. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. This isn't hard to learn at all. Like, origin, insertion, movement, rotation, like everything has an answer. Everything has a purpose. I was really fascinated by that. So I went to massage school and I finished my degree one month before I finished my massage therapy certificate. So, and also my senior year, I didn't have that many classes left. So this allowed me to do all that. I was very grateful for it because I never wanted to be a massage therapist. It was just something I went to school for because I thought it was fun. It kept me distracted from my pain. And also I got a lot of knowledge and wisdom about the pain I was in. So anyway, school was over. I graduated a month later, got my certificate. Then it was time to pack up and move home because my dad and I were going to try to find me a surgeon to do my hip surgery. And back then there was like nobody that could do it. Like nobody could do the orthoscopic hip surgery, which is like, they've only been doing hip surgeries for like 10 years in that way at the time. And we scoured San Francisco and Sacramento and we couldn't find anyone. Finally, we found someone at Stanford University. And so I was basically a subject for basically medical school. There was always students in every one of my doctor's visits, like 6 or 7 students. So had the surgery, had to recover. I was told that, you know, you probably never really run well again. And that wasn't true. I actually rehabbed myself before surgeries. I guess you can call it prehab. I prehabbed myself with bands and what I knew about dance and doing ballet bar work. And then after surgery, within a month, I was already running. And so when I went to physical therapy, I was running on the treadmill for like an hour before I actually did my physical therapy with them because they allowed me to come in early to use their machines. So after that, I was like, well, I'm far away from Los Angeles and I don't know how I'm ever going to get back. And this was during the recession. So for a good 10 years, I really struggled to find a full-time job that could give me income where I could put it away, maybe go back home to LA and pursue my life as an actor and all that. Well, I did end up on the TV show Trauma. I did some projects, did a little bit of touring in the NorCal region. But I wasn't fulfilled as an actor anymore. And I decided, you know what? I think I'm ready to let this go. Because I don't see my family. I don't see my friends. You don't have time to build relationships. I never had money to even buy a coffee table to put my feet on. Like, that was my dream, was to have Saturday morning to put my feet up on a coffee table and not have to worry about anything. That was my dream. And I said, you know, I think it's time to let it go. I went to jewelry school, manufacturing school, because I was so depressed about not being a performer anymore that I just said, I just want to work and not talk to a single soul and just be left alone. Like, that's how depressed I was. I didn't even realize I was depressed.
I was going to say, like, I don't know you at all. I'm just listening to your story, and you come across as very bubbly and outgoing and social. So, I mean, I guess that was probably your first hint that you were feeling depressed, is that you didn't want to talk to anybody. Like, how do you go from wanting to be a performer in front of, you know, thousands of people, potentially hundreds of thousands of people, to like, please just leave me in a box and leave me alone. Like, that's wild.
It's hard, because I had discovered that as an actor, you're around other actors who are always acting. You're always performing, even if you're just talking about how the weather is. They don't know how to just be human half the time. So that was sort of, I also was walking away from a lot of immodesty. Like, I was like, I'm a very modest person. And I didn't realize I was a modest person. I'm very modest. I'd never lived with my husband before I married him. Like, you know, I was around a lot of things that made me very uncomfortable all the time, you know, drugs, alcohol. And I never drank, I never smoked, I never did drugs ever. So I was just, it's just not my way. So I had left jewelry school and was like, well, I got to find something else to do. Six Flags Discovery Kingdom, which used to be an animal only like zoo type park called, if anyone knows about this in California, it's called Marine World. Then it was Marine World Africa USA, and then it was bought out by Six Flags. Well, they have this animal education department, and I was on the microphone doing a little bit of stand up on the mic all the time. And that started to get me out of my depression. But after a while, I sunk back into it. And I was like, you know, maybe I should just go get my scuba license so I can learn how to clean the shark tank. That way I don't have to talk to anyone, and I can just work with the sharks. Like, that's where my mind was going.
Are you listening to this? Like, she went from being like, I'm just trying to keep up here. She went from being a dance major in pursuit of becoming an actor to going to massage school just for the hell of it, to like finishing that, wanting to get into performing, not going to performing. Let me become a jewelry maker. No, I'm going to do some stand up here. No, maybe I'll start doing animal education. Like, what? I feel like I've been saying that a lot lately. What? But this, I mean, this is the time. I assume all this was happening in your 20s based on the timing of your hip surgery, right? So this is what your 20s is for, right? Like, and I always say to young people, I just always say to young people though, like, you don't have to know the rest of your life at 21. Like, you just don't. Mm-hmm. So many people that I went to massage school with, and I've said this before, I was like by far the youngest in my class, and I was in my late 20s when I went to massage school. Like, I think I graduated at 27. And so there were people, you know, who had two other careers before they went to massage school, who had full families, who were still like working and doing school part time. Like, this is normal. But I think it's so interesting that in your 20s, you explored so many like wildly different options, just trying to figure out like what's going to make me happy.
Well, I wasn't even trying to figure out what was going to make me happy. I was just trying to find a job. Because again, back then there was a recession, and where I lived between those two big cities,
you wanted the coffee
table.
There's
not a lot of jobs available.
I forgot. The coffee table dream. I forgot. Yes. You wanted the coffee table.
Well, I mean, I couldn't even get a job at Starbucks because I was overqualified. I couldn't, you know, I was like, wait, I'm overqualified to work at Starbucks? Like, are you kidding me? To this day, I still can't get a job at Starbucks. And I thought that was ridiculous. I'm like, I just finished college. Like, how can I not get a job at Starbucks? I couldn't get a job at a restaurant. Couldn't get a job at the bank. Like, I couldn't get jobs anywhere. It was really rough. And so I really struggled a lot. And I was, you know, living at home with my parents. God bless them for wanting to keep me there. And then I'm watching my cousins who are, you know, didn't go to school. They didn't go to college. But here they are being a real estate agent. And one of them is in mortgages, and they're killing it. And to this day, like, they're fantastic. My cousin's about to be on a reality TV show for real estate in Napa Valley. I'm very proud of them. And so I always wanted to aspire to be like my cousins in that way since I was a kid. Like, I never admitted that to anybody, actually, but I always looked up to them. They were older. They were the cool cousins. Like, I wanted to be like them, and I couldn't get there. And I was the only one in my generation who got a degree, and I still couldn't do anything. I still couldn't do anything with my efforts, but I was, you know, they were always very supportive. My whole family was supportive of my performing career and anything I did. You know, they never looked at me like, oh, you're weird, you're crazy. I did other things too, I won't get into, but I was just looking for whatever I could find that would keep me close to what I knew and what I could do, but still kind of just be something to not maybe want to rip out my hair. But the job at Six Flags, I got through a friend, and a lot of my friends were still performing. And so they did a lot of the announcing and putting on the big shows with the Dolphins and all that. So that's how I got in with them. But anyway, that was a crazy time in life. Maybe one day I'll tell you the crazy stories from that place. But after a while, I had gone on the tram to go to the front gate to clock in for work one day. And there was this older lady sitting next to me on the tram with the same uniform I'm wearing. And she looked really familiar. And I'm like, who is this woman? I know her. How do I know her? A good 15 minutes goes by and I finally figure out who it was. She was a substitute teacher when I was in high school, who also was a music major at one point. So she often substitute taught for us when I was in choir class and stuff and theater class. But then I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Is this my future? Because I'm also at this time, I didn't tell you this, I was a substitute teacher and a massage therapist in Napa Valley. I'll get to the massage part of my career and doing work on the TV show Trauma and working with Solano Community College Theater, building props and sets one day a week. I was just trying to find anything to keep me busy. And here's this woman, and I'm looking at my future. I'm like, am I going to be a substitute teacher and working at Six Flags on the weekends for the rest of my life?
Wow.
I was very, very heartbroken because I didn't want to be stuck here. I wanted to do something. I didn't know what that was going to look like anymore. So then I was really struggling back and forth for a while. And I got into, now during this time, I had to get back into the massage thing. I looked on Craigslist for work and I got my first job at a little local spa. And my first week there, I met a gal who said, hey, I'm applying for a job at this beautiful brand new spa and hotel they're building in Napa Valley called Gaia Spa. It's the first green and LEED certified hotel in the country. We should go. And it was a tiny little hotel off the freeway, off the highway. It wasn't even that special to look at, but it was really pretty inside. And we worked in the spa with some spa consultants that were brought in internationally. We learned some spa treatments from Bali. Like, I didn't realize how big this was at the time. And I'm 22 years old. I'm really 23 years old. I'm really young. And everyone else around me is in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. So I got chummy with them. And they said, yeah, you know, a lot of us work for this company that outsources us to a lot of hotels and spas. Maybe you should get in with us. So I got connected with their boss. It's like two different bosses. And like one handled the north part of Napa, one handled the south part. And they would have a storage closet on any hotel site where you can grab all your things. And you did mobile treatment inside the hotel rooms. And back then, you know, right now things are different. But back in the day, massage therapy was $65 American per 1 hour session.
That's what I was going to ask you, is what the massage scene is like there in California. Because as you were talking about, you know, seeing your future in this older woman on the tram, I was like, I wonder if that was like a message from the universe letting you know, like maybe you need to start thinking about. But when you were talking about that and you were talking about all these jobs you were doing, I was thinking like, it was massage not really a viable career option at that time? Was it not something where people were making money? Oh, you never loved it.
I never loved it. To this day, I still don't love it, but I love people. I'll get into that, I promise. So, but anyway, I got in with them and I started doing couples massages a lot. And I'm learning with these people who were pioneers in the Napa Valley industry. They've been doing this 30 years. Somehow they're still working without hurting themselves, right? I learned a lot of beautiful techniques and tricks and all kinds of things that really made my technique really nice over time. And I was starting to fall into a lot of that new ageism, a lot of witchcraft that was being introduced to massage therapy at the time. So I started to get involved in that community a lot. And so
what was the witchcraft being introduced to massage therapy at that time?
So I don't know how it's like in other places, but here in California, I've noticed that like a lot of massage therapy starts to introduce, you know, you start to introduce the idea of grounding yourself. You start to introduce the idea of tantric healing. You start to introduce Reiki, chakra bounce, all these things that are not massage at all, but yet somehow they're related to healing in that perspective. And so a lot of massage therapists will start to fall into seeking out being a part of a coven, or they'll start seeking out being part of, you know, living that life where they're conducting spells and things like that. And it's no longer about massaging the client, but it's about self-gratification through being a healer. And so a lot of that was really perpetuated in Napa Valley. That was really big back then. I don't know about now because I'm far away from it now, but that was really big. So I started to get really influenced by that. And after a while, I said, you know, I'm really not happy doing massage. My wrists hurt. I'm making good money. Oh, that was your question about the money. So back then, $65 was average for massage anywhere, but in Napa, it was $100. And then your gratuities were never less than $20. They would go up to $100. And you'd get maybe a case of wine as a gratuity, because there were a lot of wine owners that would, you know, come and see you and stuff like that.
So you could make a decent living doing massage if you loved it and wanted to take it on as a full time.
Well, again, this was a recession. So there were maybe no more than two people a day. So you might work on four people a week. Yeah. So if the economy was better and people were vacationing, then yeah, you could have made bank. Absolutely. And the pioneers, like I said, who were there long before I was, they had priority. They had seniority. They had been there at least 10, 15 years. And I'm actually to this day still in touch with my old boss, believe it or not, on Facebook. We're still in touch. He's an old man now in his early 80s now. But anyway, so I walked away from Napa and I started gravitating towards the Sacramento and San Francisco communities as a swing dancer, and was still looking, you know, to find other things that I could do with my skills, but would not actually go back to acting. That never worked out. And then I left massage alone for a long time. And then one day, this is going to be kind of, this is part of my testimony of, you know, leaving witchcraft and finding Jesus. So I won't dive into that because that's not the purpose of today, but like this is a big, big part of my story that I talk about on my website a lot and on my YouTube channel. So I was with this guy on and off for 7 years, and I was really focused on us because I wanted to get married. I wanted to have a family, and it wasn't, you know, there's a lot of things wrong with that situation, and I was really distracted and I was fighting a lot with my family. So I ended up moving with a friend in the ghetto, and our home got robbed several times, and our back window, our back sliding glass door window, was destroyed. And we had no protection all winter long, and we were freezing all night. Oh, and we took our mattresses and put them in front of the fireplace, and we lit a fire, and that's how we'd stay warm a lot of times. And then one day I was just so destroyed, like a month after that, I had no voice left. I didn't have a family relationship. I broke up with my boyfriend. The house was robbed. My computer was gone. Then 9 days later, I had a car accident where my phone was gone, my car's gone. So now I have no job, no family, no boyfriend, no computer, no car, and no phone. And all of a sudden, my roommate's mom, who owned the house, said, "Actually, I want to sell the house and I need you guys out in a month."
Holy
and I was
shit.
Like, "What am I going to do?" So one day, and again, back then I was not a Christian. I was not a believer. I wasn't anything. I was just kind of fooling around with whatever I thought sounded good and felt good that I was introduced by in the massage industry. But I had decided to borrow a laptop from a friend just so I can look on Craigslist, look for jobs, anything I could find. But I was so depressed. I took a shower 2-3 times. And I was like, no, I can't be depressed. Like, I have things to do. And I always fought through depression. I was like, no, I don't have time for depression. Like, I have to move. I can't just sit here. Like, I'm going to be homeless. Like, you got to move. And I took a shower again, the third time. And I was so broken. My heart and my soul was just so broken. I don't even know how to describe it. And I said to the ceiling out of nowhere, I said, "God, if you're there, I can't do this. I need your help." And I thought, that's the weirdest thing I could have said. Like, where did that come from? Then when I stepped out of the bathroom or stepped out of the shower, all of a sudden I was like blanketed with this peace that just completely surpassed my ability to even have an inner dialogue. I was just so peaceful. And all of a sudden in my heart, I was like, I know what to do. And all of a sudden I was listening to this voice, and this voice said, "Find out how long it's going to take for you to get your massage certification stuff back in order." And I went, massage? I haven't thought about massage in a few years. Like, why would I? All right, fine. I guess I have no other cards to play. So I called my school in Los Angeles because I didn't know where to start. So I called them and said, "Listen, I have these many hours. I know that the hour requirements have changed. This is my story. This is my situation. I need to get back on my feet. I don't know what else to do. Help me." They sent me, I don't know, I know this is not really legal, but they sent me several classes to do from home with the certificates. And they said, "Send us back the homework. Here's your transcript." They just sent me a box right away to help me get on my feet. Finished it all off in a weekend, sent it back, got all my hours. I applied with the state. And that at the time, it was known that it would take 6 months to get your certificate. I got it in 3 weeks.
How did you get it in 3 weeks?
I called them twice and just said, "Hey, is it being worked on yet?" But I don't really know. I honestly feel like it was an act of God, to be honest with you. Because why would that happen? I knew people that were still waiting for their certificate months later, and they applied before me. So, and I never told them my story. They're very, very bureaucratic. So it's like, you know, I didn't share anything about myself. I just sent the application in. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, okay, I need to buy my insurance. So I only had just enough money left on my credit card, or just enough credit on my credit card to buy the insurance. Okay, cool. Got the insurance. Well, now I can start looking for a job now. Like, I got everything I need.
Can I pause you actually? I want to talk about, like, in this moment as you're doing it, like you said, you got to a point of like, you know, you're taking three showers in a row, you're desperate, you just need something, some idea of how to get your life back together. Maybe an act of God, who knows? But for some reason, you decide, I'm going to go back to massage. But just before this, you had told us, like, you never loved it, you still don't love it. And even when that thought came to your mind, you were like, massage, like, I haven't even thought about that in a while. As you're going through these motions, knowing you have to do this because you have to get your life back together, emotionally, was anything going on? Or were you just like, power through, let me get this done? Like, were you thinking, I don't want this to be my life. I don't even want to do massage. Like, was there ever that, like, the doubt creeping in? Like, this is not the career path I wanted at all.
It's funny that you say that. Those thoughts completely left my mind.
Okay.
I saw this is what I have to run with, and it's time to run. So run. And that's what I did. I didn't think any, actually genuinely don't remember thinking anything else.
It was just like, this is what I'm doing. That's it. I'm going back into massage. Because as you said, you were going to, like, you were literally on the verge of being homeless. So
yes, this like is within weeks,
this is what you were told you had to do. Okay. So now you got your insurance. Where do you go?
Well, in Folsom, California, and Folsom's a little famous for the big prison that we have here, from back in the cowboy days.
I was gonna say, I only know that name because of Johnny Cash. So anyway,
exactly. Johnny Cash. We actually have a little bridge called Johnny Cash Bridge. For the song. But anyway, Folsom, downtown Folsom is really beautiful with these old, you know, Gold Rush era buildings, and it's still really cool down there. But anyway, on the other side of that freeway and the two rivers that we have there, there's this little area that was brand new being built, and they built a Massage Heights. They were only there for 6 months before I got there. I applied for a job, and to my surprise and my shock, I landed my first full-time job I ever had. And I've been looking for a full-time job for 6 years. So again, remember, recession.
Right. Yeah.
So I got hired. I didn't know anything about how they operate. I didn't know they were corporate. I didn't know anything. I just thought it was just a spa, like in Napa, like it's just a privately owned spa, but I didn't know anything. So I never even met the owners. And for those listening, you know, it's a franchise, essentially. You could buy one and, you know, run with it, kind of like how McDonald's used to be franchises. I don't know if they still are, but anyway. So I was so scared that I was going to lose my job every day. I busted my butt on every client. And all I was receiving were brand new people because we were new to the community. And they had a big marketing campaign. They're bringing in new people. Well, after the first month, I met the owner. And she was really smiley and really sweet and really doting on me. And I was trying to figure out, like, this is a little weird. Like, why is she being so nice to me? Like, I don't get it. She said, well, I just want you to know that you have a record for right now for our region for closing this many annual 12-month plans for clients on the first visit. I said, what? What do you mean? Like, I didn't even know that they operated on a plan.
So you were not intentionally trying to sell memberships, but you were
no.
Just, why were you so afraid of losing your job? Is it really just because you'd had such like a shit time for the last few years of trying to find employment?
Yeah.
Like you were.
Yeah.
Did you feel that you were good at massage? Like, I know you never loved it. You like people. No. But did you feel like you were good at this job?
I never thought about it before, honestly, because, you know, in Napa, they don't tell you that was great or awesome. They'll just say, thank you, that was nice. Like they won't, you know, they're on vacation. They're not looking for quality. They're just looking to spend their money and blow their money and snooze a little bit.
Right.
And I never had the chance to work in a situation where I was doing corrective work on someone's body. I'd never experienced that before. Because again, I never even took deep tissue. That wasn't even offered back then when I went to school. I learned Swedish and that was it. That's all I knew. But I learned from a lot of people that I was watching doing couples massages in Napa Valley.
Right.
Right. So I started to build my skills just from doing back then and then gave it up for a while. So then I thought, wow, I closed. What did I close? Like, what are you talking about? Memberships. I didn't know we operated on memberships. I thought they were just regular clients. So she showed me the record. There were only three people out of the nine, out of the X many that I worked on in 4 weeks. So 20 sessions a week, which I'd never done before. 20 sessions a week was like, that's some endurance training right there. And I blew out my hands for a little bit, iced them a lot, and then they felt better and I was fine. But 20 people a week from doing nothing for 5 years, that's a lot on your body. And I busted. I busted myself through that, you know. And so out of the 20 people a week, so it's 80 people a month.
Yeah.
80 people a month. Only three of them did not sign up for a membership. Mm-hmm. And I was like, membership? What's this for? Well, they loved your work so much, they're going to come every month. I'm like, really? Why? So, okay, cool, fine. I don't care. I just want to get paid so I can move on with my life and figure out my next step. I didn't care. So I was there for a long time. And one day, maybe 6 months in, there was this little voice again. And that voice said, I need you to quit your job today. Excuse me? No, we have a full-time job. For the first time ever, I'm not quitting. Hmm.
And I assume, based on what you just said too, that now you're busy here. Like, you're in demand. Yeah. People are asking for you. You've got your regulars and you're doing well.
I gotta ask this. Because I don't have a voice in my head that tells me things. Do you have a voice in your head that tells you things? And if you do, what does it sound like? Is it literally your voice in your head telling you? Like, I don't, when someone says that, I kind of get it, but I don't get it and I want to get it more.
I will let Christina speak to her voice because I think people experience this differently. Do I have like an actual voice that like talks to me and tells me things? Oh, yes. I have a constant internal dialogue, but I think that's probably just because of my, my brain is always doing 7,000 different things. I've got 27 tabs open.
Is your internal dialogue transcribable?
No, it's probably mumbo jumbo to everybody else, but I have a constant internal dialogue where the way I would describe it is exactly what I just said. And I'm not saying this to be like, oh, I'm so busy. This is just actually how I function, where there's always kind of 27 tabs open. So like, let's say there's a tab for our children. Okay. That tab is open where if you were to ask me right now, like, what do the kids have today? All I have to do, today's Tuesday. Okay. They've got that tab is open. I can go and look at like what's going on with the kids, what's going on with like food or meal prepping or groceries. What kinds of things do we need at home? Podcasts for the week. Like I have all these tabs open and there's always an internal dialogue where it's like, almost like I'm switching tabs. Like, okay, now I got to get that. Okay. That. So there's always a voice, I guess, that's like just guiding me throughout what has to happen when it comes to having to make big decisions. Now, do I have a voice that sounds like something that's me? Hmm. No, but I always have a very, very strong. I don't have. Honestly, if Morgan Freeman was in my head, that'd be kind of cool. He's not. But I always have a very, very strong reaction to everything. Like whenever I'm faced with a decision, there is actually always something that instinctively I want to say. And majority of the time, I just go with whatever my first instinct was, because to me, that's like the voice is telling me. There's no actual voice, but there's always something saying like, this is what you have to do. And like Christina's story where, you know, right now her voice is saying, you got to quit your job. Mm-hmm. Sometimes this instinct doesn't seem to make the most sense. Like if you were to put things on paper, it kind of seems like I'm not going in the direction I'm supposed to, but I've never questioned like, I'm making this decision because I feel like this is the right way to go and I just do it. So is it an actual voice? No. Christina, I don't know. Do you have an actual voice? Like, do you hear something?
Well, before I devoted my life to learning the word of God and reading my Bible every day, and now doing that, there's a difference. Mm. I never expected for us to talk about any of this today. So please don't. So please don't assume that I'm here to necessarily convert people to Christianity. That's not why I came. I came to promote my book and talk to you guys and get to have a great conversation. But now that we're kind of going this direction, it is part of my story. So back then, that voice that I heard in the bathroom, never heard it before. And it was soft and it was sweet and very subtle and very gentle. And it wasn't my voice, not my voice at all. It was so subtle. It's almost like I felt it here before I heard it here. It was very, very in my body. And it was very subtle and very kind and very warm and very loving. But at the time I couldn't analyze it because I had nothing to compare it to. I just kind of ran with what I thought was my idea, but really, Ricky, now that I think back on it, it really wasn't my voice. So then the day that I quit that job at Massage Heights, which by the way, I would never not put my 2 weeks notice in. I literally told the manager, I'm leaving. I'm not coming back. Just this voice was getting firmer with me that I need you to leave today. Like today you're supposed to leave. And finally, by the last session of the day, I said, fine, shut up. I will leave. I will go.
Now,
because I couldn't take it anymore.
Up to the point of hearing that voice, was there any signs or feelings or anything in you that you were feeling like, I need to leave soon? Or were you just in this workflow and you're like, cool, man, I got a full-time job and this is cool and I'm making money and this is great?
Workflow. Total workflow.
So you had no instincts that you're going to be leaving here.
Remember, I was saying, no, I'm not leaving. I have a full-time job. Yeah. Like, no. we're not gonna, you're not gonna win this argument. Like, and it was just a really subtle conversation. Like, I'm elaborating on it now, but like, it was very subtle. I was like, no, I'm not gonna do that thing that just came to me now. No, not doing it. Like, I'm gonna go through my day, collect my little money, collect my little tips, and just stay busy, because as long as I'm busy and money's coming in, some good thing will happen at some point where maybe one day I'll get to move out of my parents' house and finally live my life and grow up and be an adult now and move on with the dreams that I have of having a family and a husband one day, mm-hmm. or whatever it is my new dreams are now. Because remember, I went from having big dreams of being in movies and being on Broadway and all that stuff to now wanting to be in a family. Like, that's a big jump over a few years, you know, because I realized what was important to me.
Right.
So anyway, I said, you know what? I'm feeling like I have to go. Like, now all of a sudden this feeling is sinking in. Like, today is my last day. I have to go. So I said goodbye to the manager. He pulled me around the corner, gave me a really big hug just so that we were out of sight of cameras. And he said, look, I'm going to give you like a 2-hour head start before I call the owners and let them know, but they're going to blow up your phone. So, okay, that's fine. I love all you guys. You guys are a great team. I'll miss you so much. Bye. And I left. I cried for about a day. So that was a Thursday. Friday, I cried all day. And then I was really beating myself up for, why did I do such a self-destructive thing? Why did I do that? So I decided to print out my resumes, update them, looking for any job. So I went to Midtown, which is in Sacramento, right next to the river where like the people came in from all over the world to come in for the gold rush.
Hang on a second. So in these days of crying, mm-hmm. do you now move to mistrust of the voice in your head?
No, I forgot about the voice actually that day, because I was just so upset with myself for trusting it. So I had gone all over Sacramento, Midtown, this area, this cool area that I think you should visit anytime you're in the area, if you ever go. And I went to eat at this restaurant I knew on the corner of like J and 24th or J or 25th. I know that area very well. And that's why I remember the cross street, because it's all numbers and letters down there. Anyway, when I left the restaurant, I was going to turn left to go to my car. I had never been to the right before. I'd never gone down one more block. All of a sudden that voice came to me again and said, walk one more block. So I walked one more block, and all of a sudden, right. And I'm 5'1", I'm pretty small. So in my line of vision, right at my eye level, there was a little sign, a little piece of paper in the window that said massage room for rent. And I went, okay. And so I called the number. I didn't have any friends in the area, by the way. I had no clients. I had $43 in my bank account. That's all I had left. I called and said, hey, can I rent your room? Not knowing how in the world I was going to have the money for it. I didn't even know how much it cost. And the next day they said, well, you know, since you're just getting started, why don't you pay us the first month's rent after the end of the month, and then pay us the first month's rent that same week, and then you'll be at the beginning of every month. Okay. So I started to mow lawns and babysit and sell things and do whatever I had to make that first month's rent of $500. And then I started collecting things. It's okay. I need a table. I have a table. I need some towels. I need this. I started collecting things in the course of the second month. 6 months later, I was full-time. And then all of a sudden I had to move to downtown. And then I was there for about a year and a half doing really well. And I was like, okay, we're getting somewhere. Like, I'm going to be okay. Again, I still don't love it. I'm still trying to find my way, figuring out my protocols, figuring out how to run a business. I've never run a business before in my life, by the way. That's a whole other story. But all of a sudden I was sitting there in this Chinese restaurant on the corner eating some lunch. And all of a sudden just this little voice said, I want you to Google your name. Like, that's weird. Why would I do that? Okay, fine. I'll Google my name. So I Google my name, and I thought I was going to see some, like, I don't know, stuff from high school, stuff from college, like, whatever. But all of a sudden I saw this article on CBN Local for the top 10 places to have a relaxation getaway. And my business was number 9. All the businesses there were big spas. And then there was me, number 9. It's just a little picture of me. And I'm like, what? Was this someone who came from a Groupon? Because back then I used the Groupon game.
I was going to say, like, did none of your clients tell you, like, hey, you're... And like,
I'm so confused.
What are you confused about?
I'm confused that if I don't like something and I don't necessarily feel I'm really good at it, like you kind of stated, like, yeah, you don't even know if you're good. I don't think I would stick around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's like, why I'm waiting to hear this little, out of this little voice had some power
like,
over her.
I wouldn't keep banging at it. I would just be like, okay, the only way I'm going to stay doing something is one, I'm good at it, right? So like Nikki always talks about how her dad used to speak about employment. Nikki, who comes on our podcast often, and her dad's like, you know what? Passion isn't the deal.
Yeah.
It's find something that you're good at.
That people will pay you for.
Yeah. Right? So if you're feeling like, I don't even like doing this, and you don't even feel that you're good at it, then I'm confused as to
why. Or is this the moment that you realized you must be good at it? Because suddenly you're number 9 with all these big spas.
I think, I don't know if it's just maybe self-deprecation or if maybe I'm humble and I didn't know I was humble. I don't know really the definition of that word either, but like, I just was more busy with, I need to make a living. I need to make a living with something. Obviously there's some results here, and the clients are really nice and I like seeing them and I make people happy. So, okay, I must be doing something right. But again, for some reason at this time, I was not even thinking these things. It didn't even cross my mind. I was just like, okay, we got work to do. Let's get the job done. And I was passionate about the fact that like, okay, I know what to do now. Like, I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. Money's coming in. Bills are getting paid. The debt's coming down. And all I did was eat, breathe, and sleep building this business. I didn't even eat, breathe, and sleep quality. I didn't eat, breathe, and sleep joy. I didn't eat, breathe, and sleep anything except, okay, I feel like now I have direction. That was it. And so everything you're saying, completely viable questions and concerns. It's funny that you're asking them now because I've never thought about it till this conversation. Hmm. Really, I don't remember ever thinking about it. But this is sort of a pinnacle point in the story. So
also feeling like you have direction suddenly gives purpose, even if you dislike what you're doing or you don't think you're good at it. But feeling mm-hmm. that you have direction,
yeah,
and having you're a plan, on a path, and yeah. you have a plan, then it feels like you have purpose. And then sometimes that's good enough, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, well, I didn't think that deep into it. I normally I'm a very deep thinker, but I didn't think about it. I just ran with it. That's all I did was run for a year. So, anyway, so I sat there and I was blown away. Like, what happened here? Like, how did this happen? And I was thinking in deep thought, just quietly, like trying to process what I just read. And it still exists. It's from 2014. It's still on the internet. I posted on my website recently because I was like, I should share this story. But I, out of nowhere, what came out of my mouth, and I was whispering because there was other people around me, what came out of my mouth was, God, look what we did together. And all of a sudden my body was raging and head to toe chills. And I started to think, hold on. You exist? God, was this you the whole time? Quietly, gently prompting me and telling me what to do? And I got really like, oh my God, my entire perspective, my entire life, my entire world, the entire reality of the universe just shifted. I said, okay, hold on. Okay. So if you're real, this changes everything. So I tell you what, and I don't remember how I jumped from this point to this point, but there's a little jump. And I said, okay, listen, God, like if you're there, I'll do whatever you want. I clearly can't make decisions for my own life without your help. So you want me to go to Africa? I'll go to Africa. You want me to go to India? I'll go to India. I don't want to go to this place. I'll go anywhere you send me because clearly I can't make decisions for myself and have it go right without your help. But if it's something that you want from me, what I'm really asking for you is to provide me with a husband, someone to love for the rest of my life, provide me with a family. And I want you to pick who that's going to be. And I'll make you a deal. Let's make this deal that the next person I'm dating is the one. Or the one right after him. That way I know no matter what, I'm going to be so close to finding my husband that I don't have to have any anxiety about it. I don't have to be codependent. I just know my husband's coming. So I left that alone, never thought about it. 4 months later, I met a guy. Through him, I met my husband. And then not long after we were maybe married, so maybe 2-3 years later, we were already married. He said, hey, I don't think I ever told you the story about how we met. I said, before we met, I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, back then, remember, I'm practicing witchcraft. I'm practicing New Ageism. I'm not a believer in Jesus or anything. I was just sort of now discovering that God was a real thing. But my husband was a believer for a long time. And we never talked about it. It was not something we talked about when we were dating. So I didn't really know. But he said, actually, about 4 or 5 months before I met you, I was in church and one of the ladies was praying for me. And she said, God says that your wife is coming very soon. She's being prepared for you. So that was happening right before we met. And so no matter how much we fight or no matter how much our marriage might be going in these weird valleys and peaks, I know that it was God that brought us together. Now, my husband had a very big impact on my business over time, but really, like, my jump into being working for myself was really a faith-based journey that I didn't realize required faith, but I was walking in faith the whole time without thinking much about it. So I don't recommend people do what I did to, I just say, pick up and run with what you got. But all I did was be obedient to running with what I found in front of me to work.
Do you think God talks to everybody?
He speaks to everyone. It's just whether or not someone wants to listen. And that's a whole other subject. We could talk for hours about that. But it's often a very sweet, subtle little voice that gives you peace. If it doesn't give you peace, it's definitely not him.
Do I need to be receptive in order to have God talk to me?
So scripture tells us that, you know, if you seek, you will find. And if you are willing to receive, you will receive. But you won't, it might not be in that moment. It might be days, weeks, months later about that specific subject. Like, I had prayed about this one thing and it took 3 years before I received my answer on that matter. And I found that the more I spend time in private with God, praying, reading his scriptures, and just saying, God, I'm just sitting before you here. And sometimes I'll receive. Now, sometimes I'll receive voices that are not, that sound like me, and they're maybe mean, or they'll be like, yeah, that person's not going to like you for that. Like, those self-deprecating things that we think, those are demonic. I know for a fact those are demonic. Those are not how we're naturally created to be. We're naturally created to be like, yeah, I can do this. Yeah, I'm awesome. Yeah, I'm beautiful. Yeah, I'm meant to be here. I'm special, because we are. We're perfectly and wonderfully designed. Like, we're meant to be here. But if something's self-deprecating, that is not you, and that is not holy. So that's my advice to anyone who's wondering about that stuff. You can look into it yourself, but that's what I've known to be true.
So the way that you're saying, like, God talks to everybody, and, you know, Mark's question, do I have to be receptive? For those people listening who maybe aren't sure if they believe in God, or they believe in a mm-hmm. God, maybe people who are not Christian, maybe people who believe in, like, source or the universe or whatever, like, it's all sort of the same idea, I guess. There's just different belief systems. Like, most people believe in some sort of higher being, whether it's God or universe or whatever they want to call it. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's the same feeling that you're describing? If somebody, let's say, believes there's some sort of higher power and they say, like, I'm open, I listen to the universe, like, is that, in your opinion, the same kind of experience you had with the little voice that you now know, like, that's God talking to you? Is this the same?
No, actually, that's a great question. That's a beautiful question, actually. Very thorough. So part of the story that I left out is that there were many times that after this will take hours to get into, I swear. But there was a point where I finally said, you know what, Jesus, I don't understand you. I'm afraid of you. I don't know if you're real, but you know what? I'm going to believe that you said who you say you are, and I'm going to learn what that is. And so I just pray that you reveal yourself to me over time, that you reveal yourself to me. God, reveal yourself to me. That's a way of saying, hey, God, I'm submissive to the joy of knowing who you really are by you telling me yourself instead of someone else or something else or a book or someone's opinion or someone's culture or someone's religion telling me who you are. So that's a great step. I would say, you know, above all else, that's probably the best way to go. I do believe that he'll speak to all of us because we were all designed by him. We're all loved by him. And if he never promised us a happy life, he never promised us a beautiful, easy life with no pain. He never promised us a life with no trauma. That's not how it works. But, you know, with pursuing the truth, anytime you're pursuing truth, I want the truth, no matter how much it hurts or no matter how much it's against what I really want to believe, God will meet you where you are and he'll walk you through if you still want the truth. That's what I've come to find out. And I only pursued that because after living the life I lived up to this point that I told you guys in the story, there were times that I was actually demonically attacked and choked out doing yoga and started seeing visions and started seeing demons everywhere. And it wasn't until I realized, wow, I've got to renounce and rebuke some of these things. And I have to, you know, turn away from some of these things completely and give my life completely over in submissiveness to God. And ever since then, amazing things have been happening in my heart that have been healing, whether I pursued the healing or not. a lot of amazing things have been happening in my family, in my marriage, a lot of things have been happening in my business, and people around me who are also seeking that information are also seeking the truth. But the thing is, don't listen to me as a source of truth. I say, ask the source, ask the conscious source that created everything. The universe didn't create itself. God created the universe. He said so himself. So if you want to say, you know what, I'm going to take a chance and go on a limb here. I don't know what I believe. I don't even know if I believe this chick talking right now, but I'm kind of wanting the truth. And I kind of want healing in my life. I'm just going to go ahead and go for it. So I say, there's no harm in asking the God of the entire world, the entire universe, for the truth. The worst you'll get is silence for a while. But I think no matter what you believe, I think that we're all pursuing to find out who we are. Like, who are we really? Who are we really meant to be? And do I matter? And those are the things that I think are universal to all people in the world.
Things just got very deep in here. I'm very interested to see what people's thoughts are on the God aspect of this conversation, because again, there's people who have different belief systems, but
yeah,
this has led you, like, as Mark said, it completely confused him, because this, you decided, I'm just going to listen and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And like you said, you didn't even put that much thought into it. It's just, I'm going to do what I'm being told to do. And somehow it led you to renting out a space and running your own business, even though you never intended to be a massage therapist, you never intended to be a business owner. And now here you are doing it. And then you meet your husband. And so obviously now you're at a point where you're like, okay, all of this was meant to happen. How do you then get down this path of, you know, focusing on this very specific population of people? How do you end up writing a book? I still am looking at that peach behind you. Like, How does this all come into your life then?
To just reiterate, I never consciously thought I'm going to follow this voice. It sounded like a great idea, so I went with it. The little voice gave me this idea. I'm like, that makes sense. Let's do that. Like, I just ran with it. I think that's the actor in me. Actors are really good at improvising and making a decision, an executive decision, without questioning it. We just go, we fly it, we do the scene, we improvise on stage. Like, I think that's part of my ability to think that way, is just go with it, run with it, see what happens, you know, have faith, don't be afraid, just do it. And I was consciously like working. And my husband and I were really focused at the time, less on faith and less on work, and, you know, or less on the joy of work, because we were fighting a lot. We were fighting quite a bit. And at the time I was very distracted by that. I was distracted by a lot of personal pain of things that were happening all of a sudden in my family. And I was also like, wow, I'm not bringing in the money that I need to be making. You're not bringing the money that we need to make. Things are changing. Like, we can't afford things. The kids need this. And he has two children that are wonderful. They're my wonderful stepsons. You know, like, there's so many needs floating around. We don't even get to think about these things anymore. All of a sudden we lost our home, our rental home, and we had to move in with my mother-in-law for a little while. And then we moved in with my parents for a little while. And then we came back to SAC. And now I've got my business. We own a house now. So a lot of things happened in about 4 years. So when we moved in with my mother-in-law, at the time, I was like, you know what? I need to spend some time learning how to have routine. I need to spend time learning how to do my business from the back end well, because I really don't know what I'm doing and all this stuff. And at the time, I was really trying to figure out what I want to do, what I want to be. And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm really bored with massage. I'm so tired of touching butts for a living and touching shoulders. And how does that feel? And do you need to rub that out? Do you want to make another appointment? Like, I felt like I had no purpose. And I didn't really feel any joy. I really didn't. I just did the job because it's what I had. Apparently I'm good at it, because now I've got 45 out of 5-star reviews on Yelp. Okay, fine. Maybe I'm good at what I do. Let's just keep going with it. But I don't have another choice. And I was too anxiety ridden to find another job. Even to this day, I struggle to find other work if I wanted to leave. Like, those times where I entertain wanting to leave, because after 20 years of not having a corporate job, I don't know if I'm even hireable. So that's why I always shied away from pursuing those things. And I just stuck with massage because I was afraid. So anyway, I just was on a walk and I just kind of looked up at the sky and I was like, God, I'm so bored with this. And I wasn't even trying to pray. I was just like airing my grievances to myself, but God hears everything, in my opinion. So I said, Lord, I'm just so bored. I hate being a massage therapist. I don't know the names of muscles anymore. I don't know this. I can't solve people's problems. I have to refer them out. Like, can you give me some purpose? Dang it. Like, I'm tired of this. And then a few weeks later, I had my very first case of plastic surgery recovery. She had a Brazilian butt lift, a 360-degree tummy tuck or body lift. She had her breasts done, her arms done, her thighs done, and her chin. And she said the funniest thing. I've never heard this again. She said, listen, I know nobody in our area does this work, but would you be willing to take direction if I told you what felt good and what didn't? And because at the time I was desperate for money, I wasn't afraid to take a client that was outside what I felt was my scope. And I said, sure, I'll do whatever you want. So I saw her. She was really funny. She was really nice. She was very warm. And anything I did with subtle touches, like I was just letting her guide me on what she wanted. And when we were done, she went from being really inflated, like really swollen like this, to shrinking down a lot. And I said, holy crap, this lymphatic drainage crap works? Because I took a 32-hour course. Okay. And I never used it. I was interested in it and I was fascinated by it, but I could feel it. I can touch the skin. I can feel where the pockets of fluid are hanging out, like right under the skin. It feels like a different texture. But I put it on my menu for 5 minutes thinking maybe one day someone might need this, but it never did anything. This person comes in, she's so happy. And I thought, cool, I'll probably never see a client like that ever again as long as I live. But that was a really amazing experience. 3 weeks later, I had another one. And I'm thinking, how did that happen? I had her for 4 months, similar, you know, checklist of things that she had done. Cool. Probably never see a client like that ever again. Then that went to like 3 months later to now having two or three of those kind of cases a week. And I went, okay, I don't feel I'm qualified for this. Like I need to do some research. So I started researching and I really couldn't afford to take more training. I really couldn't. Even if it was a one weekend class, I couldn't afford it. But I was like, you know, I'm just going to research. So I started researching the lymphatic system. I started watching videos. I started watching what other people do. And I listened to my clients. I'd say, how is that feeling? Does this feel like it's working for you? So my training really came from clients telling me what's working for them. Then before I knew it, right before the pandemic, so maybe like 2017 to 2019, somewhere in there, that's when I started getting almost exclusively plastic surgery cases. And they weren't local. They were from Miami. They were from Mexico. They were from Colombia. They were from everywhere.
Were people just referring to you? Like, did you become known as like, hey, I know the lady in that town that does this work?
Yes and no. People were finding me on Instagram and on Google. And then occasionally there were referrals. Like they'd say, oh yeah, my nurse or my surgeon from my, you know, where I went in the Dominican Republic referred you. I'm like, how did they know me? Probably because they started Googling people in that area and were like, here's a list of people we found. But I was the only one advertising that I was doing this because, well, I mean, these people need help and I'm willing to help and they're really nice and the work is really easy on my body and they're really nice people. I like working with them and I had joy working with these people. So I started to find joy again. I started to find purpose again. But then I was starting to find all these problems that were happening with all these horror stories, which is really the point of why I wrote my book. And I started to find that there's a lot of cult-like things that are happening in post-surgical care from massage therapists or those who claim to be massage therapists, as well as nurses, that are perpetuated by surgeons. So I started to get really, really passionate about walking these women through, hey, this is what I've heard that helps. This is what a client did that really helped with this issue. Compression garments, I know nothing about them. Let me look into it. So I started learning and watching how they work, how they operate on people to help them with their swelling and realize, wow, these people are having issues with these garments because they're not fitting right. Why? Because there's physics behind why they fit and don't fit the right way for someone. Okay, cool. Diet. Let's learn about, you know, how to manage your diet post-surgically. So I started researching that. So I was doing a lot of research because I was so really heartbroken over these women who were crying in my arms because of the pain they were in. They were crying in my arms for the fact that no one was being supportive and said, well, you wanted this. And then also I started to go, you know what, I'm getting the same questions every day. So this went like a huge jump into not having any focus on what kind of client I want to work with. So all of a sudden, this like wave of people that doesn't stop coming that are post-surgical, they're all getting liposuction, tummy tucks, and Brazilian butt lifts, most of which from Miami, Florida. So then the pandemic hit, and I don't know if anyone knows this, but I talk about this a lot in the early part of the book, is that the plastic surgery industry absolutely exploded during COVID. People didn't care about no COVID. They got their little unemployment check. They got their little government hustle money from President Trump. They had the time off. They could go and have surgery and nobody would know. And they can come back and heal and nobody would know if they had surgery. So now I'm not able to work because, you know, we're shut down. But my full-time job was answering phone calls and emails and text messages and DMs from people asking if I was taking appointments and what to do about the pain they were in. So that's when I said, okay, there's got to be a resource. There was no resource. So I created a Facebook group now in a year and a half, this Facebook group is now over almost 11,000 people, and wow. It naturally grew on its own. So now it's like, okay, these women are still asking the same questions. What do I do? How do I help them? I'm not an LMT. I'm not a licensed lymphedema therapist. So I started seeking out mentors, and I started seeking out people who knew more than me. But funny, their training didn't directly cover plastic surgery. Their training covered oncology. It covered lymphedema, and other autoimmune conditions and things like that, that were very different. But plastic surgery was not addressed. So only now plastic surgery training is being addressed by one group. I think they're called ACOLS, A-C-O-L-S. But I heard that the training is very limited, like very, very basic, very, very limited. So I was like, oh my gosh, we have a huge bridge, a huge gap that needs to be bridged between plastic surgery recovery and the massage education industry. It's 2023 and we still have this big gap. So anyway, I still felt like, okay, God, this is the demographic you want me to work with? Like, are you kidding? Like, this is totally okay. I'll do whatever you want. And if they're happy and they're feeling good with the work I'm doing, even though I have no idea what I'm doing half the time, and I'm still trying to figure it out, then I just pray that you bless my business and you bless these women, that you bless them with solutions, that you just bless them with whatever they need, you know? And so ever since then, I've been learning a lot and seeing, wow, like this is a really, really purposeful place to be. And I really wish more massage therapists would focus on this demographic because they need help. They really do need help. And oftentimes plastic surgeons have no idea what lymphatic drainage is, and they don't even understand post-op protocols that their patients are begging them for.
That's not the first time that I've heard that. Like I said, we have another therapist here in Ontario that does some work with us. She's actually created a course for this, and that was one thing that she reiterated to me multiple times, that the surgeons themselves actually don't direct the patients to the proper resources and proper care for recovery. And I see that the Peach book behind you is called Recovery Culture. So yes. What does this mean, recovery culture?
So this was a love project that I wrote for the community because I got tired of writing down post-it notes of things to try and things to do. And I got tired of answering the question of why my surgeon didn't tell me XYZ. And I said, well, let's try to answer everything in one shot. So recovery culture, the term recovery culture, it really is a paradox between cult and culture, meaning information that clients are not getting plastic surgeons, they have to go on the internet or social media to get answers to. And they're getting their answers from people who are massage therapists, who are working outside of their training or understanding or talent, or illegally practicing actually massage therapists. That happens a lot in this industry, so much, especially in Miami, Florida, and Nevada and San Diego, California. And also there's a lack of understanding in the fact that, guess what? Plastic surgery is still part of the Western medicine society. It's the Western medicine bubble. There's still going to be faults. There any type of post-operative care in Western medicine is definitely lacking, because therapeutics are not part of it still. Like, we're starting to creep into it, but not a whole lot. So also, it's a business. It's not about healthcare. It's a business. They're there to sell you your hopes and dreams, right? So what you're lacking and you need to get elsewhere, you start to find things that are recommended from Colombia, from Venezuela, from Mexico, from the Dominican Republic, from Jamaica, from Miami, Florida specifically. So a lot of these things are great. You know, some things work, like pineapple tea is really helpful because the bromelain, it drops down a lot of that inflammation. So now everyone's making their own pineapple tea with pineapple skins and cores left and right. It's a thing that happens. Is it holistic aftercare? Yeah, it definitely is, but it's more culture that brought it in. And then you have, you know, these women who say, oh, you have to wear a faja, which is a body garment. It's basically shapewear made in Colombia. And they're very, very tight weave. And the tighter, the better. The tighter you get, the better results you're going to get. No, that's not true. You're going to die. You don't want to do that. So, and sometimes plastic surgeons say, oh yeah, I want you to get wood therapy and this and that the day after surgery. When if you talk to anyone who's in lymphatics, they'll say, you need to wait various days before you even get care, because you might pass out, you might have a blood clot, you might have other issues. But these surgeons out there specifically are recommending things right away. And then even recommending treatments that are not really known in massage therapy, like Colombian wood therapy, which you cannot sanitize those tools. It's impossible unless they're steel, but we don't even know how the steel ones work against the body. And those tools cause a lot of friction, and you can actually create damage and cause fibrosis and other issues. So needless to say that the community really needed some kind of support. There's one other couple books made for plastic surgery recovery, but they're tips of things to buy, but they're not in depth with the science of why this works, why this doesn't work, how did this idea come about, and why you should avoid it or go for it, or what you need to research further. Does this apply to you? So a lot of it is really based on dialogues I've had with clients over the years, conversations over, you know, Instagram live with other therapists, and really just walking clients through that really had no hope to have an easier recovery, where they feel like they can't even breathe or stand up straight or go to the bathroom, and they have no help. And their surgeon didn't prepare them for the reality of what the recovery is going to be like.
This is all the stuff that I've already heard. You know, there's just, they have their surgery and they're sent on their merry way, and there's no direction. So your intent then in writing this book, your passion project, was really to give people a resource of things they can seek out. Is there a place where, for anybody listening, any massage therapists anywhere who are interested in this, is there a place where people can find you, can find your book, can follow you? I don't know what kind of contact info you want to give out.
Sure. So I didn't create a website for this book, but you can access the book on Amazon. Just type in Recovery Culture. It'll pop up. If you are a massage therapist, I definitely recommend you get the book, because most of your job working with this clientele, 80% of the time, all you're doing is answering questions as much as you are doing treatment. So please, please help yourself and ask me questions and challenge me if I got something that you disagree with. I want to hear it. So you can get it on Amazon. If you want to follow my work with my office, my business is called Jungle and Grace Massage Studio. I'm in Sacramento, California. And Instagram is Jungle and Grace. I did create a link tree for the book and other resources. So it's linktree.com/recoveryculture.
Cool, cool, cool. This was interesting, because normally we have like such a back and forth, but like, you're a storyteller, Christina. You're like, we just kind of both just sat here like, Like this was a wild ride you took us on for the last hour and some odd.
I didn't expect to go back that far in my journey, but you can't tell part of that story without telling the rest of it. And so I'm sorry. I really wanted to hear more of you guys too.
No, this was good. I think that it gives people a lot to think about too. Like, I think just lately, this idea, this plastic surgery and post-op care, this is becoming more mainstream. I'm seeing that people are talking about it more in massage groups, because people are realizing massage therapists actually have or possess a lot of the hands-on skills that are needed in helping these patients. And a lot of like people who maybe never thought about, as you said, plastic surgery, they'll think about things like cancer or like oncology massage, like you had mentioned, but plastic surgery only now is seeming to get a little more attention. And maybe I didn't even realize until you had mentioned that during the pandemic, it kind of exploded, because you're right. People had this time to like go and get surgery and then recover, and nobody knows. Nobody knows what happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm hearing a lot more of it. Like, I didn't even know.
Why is there always such a secret behind this?
I have no idea. Maybe this is good. Why?
Because
it's
I'm not gonna lie. Like, when you get a facelift, we all fucking know. Well, like, do you know what I mean?
you get a BBL.
When you got your lips done and your eyes done, we all know. Yeah. So why is it a fucking secret?
I don't know.
Well,
but Christina
it's
knows.
Because in our culture. So let me say by saying this. I'm half Latino. I'm half Sicilian. I'm from New York. Actually, from that side of the world, we're kind of closer to where you're at. But like, I'm Sicilian, but I'm Mexican. And so being Mexican, I'm really familiar with this. And so they're very vain. Latinos are very, very vain. And we bully each other into putting on lipstick and putting on blush because we look a little sick, like out of nowhere. We're not very nice about it. And that's how I grew up with my aunties and my mom like that. And so it's very normal to have your first nose job at 17 or 18 as a graduation gift in Colombia, Venezuela. It's very normal to have liposuction at 23 years old before you've had your first kid in Mexico. It's very normal to pursue these things. And they are dinner table conversations. Even though they're sometimes very modest in culture, these are dinner table conversations. Right. In the United States, we don't have this as a dinner table conversation. We don't. It's something that the elite does. It's something that the people who put their money, like, you're either elite and can afford it and it's no big deal, or you are middle class or poor and you've worked 2-3 jobs just to pay for the surgery, when really you've got more important things that you should be paying for, like maybe buying a house for your children. Like, people have a lot more shaming that they do in other ways here than they do in other cultures. So it's not a dinner table conversation. And that's really, really why.
I also wondered if it had anything to do with the fact that I know things are shifting a little bit, but there, I know when I was younger, it was like, you know, you have to exercise and you have to stay fit and you have to this and that and that. And it almost, like, plastic surgery almost felt like cheating in a way, like for younger people that are supposed to be like, you know, focus on their health and their fitness, and you go to the gym and you eat right and this and that. But getting like liposuction or getting any of this stuff seemed almost like cheating, which I agree with you, Mark, that it is weird. Like, if you want to go and make an adjustment to your own body and your own, like, that's that you do you. I like, cool. That's for you. And if that's going to make you feel good about yourself, or it's just something you really want, I don't think it needs to be something that people shame you for. I don't even see the need for it to be a secret. But also, I would never call somebody out. Like, I've got a couple of friends who, like, I can tell you when I look at the pictures of us when we're 20, and then, you know, I see them now at 40, I'm like, oh boy, your face isn't even close to the same as it was 20 years ago. But I'm not going to call them out on it, because if they haven't openly said anything, it's because they don't want people to know that they've altered their entire appearance. I mean, yeah, like I said, I know when I see them, I'm like, whoa, you have a different face. But cool. I mean, if you're happy, then I'm happy.
You know, you bring up a good point, because in where my mom and dad met in Mexico, my dad went to medical school in Mexico, and that's how he met my mom. And he, when they were there, you know, he noticed this. He would put on his little shorts and put on his little shirt and go running and work out and exercise. And he'd get made fun of all the time for exercising. So he was telling me, yeah, in Mexico, he makes a very generalized statement that might be 20 years old. But he said, yeah, Mexicans, they don't like to sweat. They don't like to exercise. Like, no, they're not going to waste their time. Like, they're not going to do it. They're not going to put themselves out there like that. They're not going to exercise.
They'll just plan their liposuction. They'll just plan their surgeries at the dinner table.
Yeah, they'll live with what they got. They'll wear a faja. We say, hey, go fajate, meaning go wrap yourself up, pull yourself together. It means put on your garment, your girdle, essentially. That's where the term faja came from. So, and that's what these women wear after surgery to help them with their swelling. So anyway, and it's very true. I watch my mother. My mother's like, I don't drink water. I'll chew ice, but I don't drink water. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. And all of my aunts would never work out. But then as soon as our generation started working out and taking it seriously, it was different, because we're Americanized now. So Americans are more focused on health, and Mexicans are more focused on being practical and getting the best results quickly. And it's just a cultural difference. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing I want to mention, speaking of culture cult, the thing that really, really upsets me more about this industry is that in the United States, not sure about Canada, but here in the United States, the authorities are barely starting to understand, barely. And I had to educate someone at ABMP about this not long ago. I've called someone high up at ABMP, and they were shocked by what I had to tell them, which I'll tell you guys in a minute what that was. I've talked to the CAMTC here in California. I've talked to a few massage schools here in California. And even a few sheriffs, and they're completely stunned when I tell them, you don't understand. Like, there's some illegal things happening that could actually hurt clients. So here's the thing that I didn't mention, I wish I did earlier, is that one of the illegal things that's happening that I'm really trying to help these consumers understand is illegal incisional drainage, meaning they leave an incision site open where the cannula goes in the body where they suck up the fat. And that wound sometimes is closed. Sometimes there's a tube with a bladder so that it drains out naturally, which I hate that method. And then they'll sometimes leave them open, and they close on their own 48 hours after surgery. But what's happening is that you have nurses, MTs, fake nurses, and fake massage therapists, and body sculptors who are squeezing these women and say, oh yeah, I do post-op there. Yeah, I do lymphatic drainage for BBL. And they'll squeeze the body literally a day after surgery. Okay, so you're dog meat on the inside. You just had essentially an amputation, okay, for lack of better words. And you're being squeezed to death to get all that fluid out, because they say, oh no, we got to get all this fluid out or you're not going to get your results. Excuse me, that's what the surgery is for, number one. Number two, swelling is important. You have to leave some swelling fluid in your body. It has an actual biological purpose. You can't mess with that. You have to give it some time. And so what I'm realizing is, oh my God, these clients are traumatized and they're crying because they were so traumatized, they're afraid to let me touch them. But when I touch them, it's very light and very gentle. And some of them are so relieved. And then other half of them are furious that I'm not draining them like what they had done in Miami. They're mad, they're angry, they're pissed. Even if I could explain it 20 times, but I'm not going to do that. And they'll be like, no, you have to, because there's an addiction. There's an addiction aspect to this pain. That if you're not doing all the things, you're not doing all of the body sculpting treatments, you're not doing the cavitation, you're not doing radio frequency, you're not doing the squeeze, you're not doing all that, that you're not going to get the results that you paid $20,000 for. I'm sorry, wasn't that your surgeon's responsibility to give you that? You have to wait a year. You have to heal. But they don't care about healing. They care about looking good right away. They care about feeling good right away. And so it's this rush culture that makes a lot of these women a little bit neurotic when it comes to research. Either they don't do any research and then they scramble as they're healing and realizing, what have I done? And then, or you have the ones that are prepared and they're comfortable and confident, or they're over-prepared and telling you how to do your job and they're very difficult to work with. So you're dealing with an aspect of this that is addictive to the excitement and the fuss. And that's also full of anxiety. A lot of these women do not have a lot of self-love. They don't have self-respect. They don't have this understanding that they're going to be okay. Like, they really are putting their entire value of who they are as a person in how they look every day. And when it's challenged even slightly by being somewhat swollen, they flip out. So you're dealing with a demographic that could potentially be very emotional, that could be very confused, that could be very aggressive. They're not just meek and saying, "Hey, I'm here. I'm hoping you can help me." It's a very different demographic, but not for everybody to work with. And so the reason why I wrote the book is because I'm trying to help these women realize, no, what you are about to pursue, that's illegal in all 50 states, and your surgeon's the one encouraging it because they don't know better. They don't know what's legal and not legal for us in our scope of practice. They don't know. They don't care. All they care about is doing what they were taught and stay in their lane. And I don't blame them for that. We all stay in our lane. But all of that should come from this training in medical school. And that's where we lack, where we need to be for these people to be okay. And there's no reason why plastic surgery isn't going to give you quality of life. For some people, it's necessary. You lose 100 pounds, that skin is going to physically hurt your body. It's going to hurt you. You can't function well. I had a lady who needed, diastasis recti repair, and she had a tummy tuck, and then she was finally able to work out and live the life she wanted. I had clients who, for the first time in their life, they were confident. They said, you know what? I'm going to take care of myself now. I'm going to eat right, and I never ate right before. I'm going to work out now, and I never worked out before, because now I feel confident walking into a gym. Plastic surgery has its place for some people. Mm-hmm. It can give you quality of life, but why are you pursuing it? And they never ask themselves, why? Am I trying to heal something in here? Am I trying to heal something in here? Am I trying to fix something that was damaged? Or do I just want a little nip, little tuck here and just to feel good because I deserve it? Everyone has a different reason. There's no wrong reason, except when you go too far and now it's an obsession, it's an addiction. And a lot of the post-op care becomes very addictive. The pain becomes addictive to some of these folks. And it's scary to watch.
This is like scary to even listen to. So I don't know if you've ever listened to any of our episodes that we've talked quite a few times about plastic surgery. And to be honest with you, I said, I'm more than happy for somebody who wants to go do whatever they want to do. Plastic surgery scares the shit out of me. Scares the shit out of me. Like, I don't think I could ever do it. And even as you're talking about them wanting to like get all the fluid squeezed out, I'm like, this just seems like the wrong decision. So, I mean, I'm happy there's people like you or like our friend Jessica who are taking the time to learn about what these people go through, about the surgeries, about proper healing. I mean, it must be really hard for you to have to deal with the people who are addicted. I mean, that's got to be a whole other conversation of people who are just addicted to a certain aesthetic and not so concerned about their healing. But yeah, scares the absolute crap out of me. But I know that this is a population that needs care just like anybody else. And yeah, I'm glad there's people that can be a resource for it, because it's not for me. I get really, really queasy at the thought of it. I don't know if I could do like drainage on somebody who just had like a 360 tummy tuck or liposuction or BBL. I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. It's a lot for me.
Well, you know, it's you'd be shocked at how much they feel better with just even just the touch of your hand or your fingers on their skin. They feel comforted. They feel taken care of. And they feel better right away. You barely have to do hard. You could blow on the client and they'll start to drain internally and then urinate later, like a lymphatic drainage, because that's how swollen they are. Their body is really desperate to release itself. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you what I find joy in with these people. I find joy in reminding them a few things. One, and this is something, and so I do have very subtle moments of scripture put in the book, because I'm going to glorify God wherever I go, always. And I really feel like I couldn't have written this book without me sitting in prayer and sitting with my Bible all the time. I really couldn't have written it. But the one thing that's the underlying tone for the whole book is the scripture, Psalms 139:14. I was fearfully and wonderfully made, which we roughly translate it as I was beautifully and wonderfully made. Not only were you beautiful because you're you, there's no one else like you, but your body was designed perfectly with DNA that repairs itself. So even if the repair looks ugly right now and it goes through the ugly puppy stage for a while, like Pomeranians, they go through this little ugly stage where they're not very cute and then they get really beautiful. Same thing with your body when you're coming from any surgery, but specifically plastic surgery, you go through this ugly puppy stage for a while, but your body is so capable and you have to speak life over it. You have to speak joy over it. And you have to say, my body is so smart. It knows what to do. We already put the stitches in. I already had this done. I've got my little garment. I'm drinking my little pineapple tea. I just need to give it time. And I just need to have joy that my body is so well equipped for this, because your body was designed to recover from stupid. Your body was designed to recover from trauma.
So doesn't that Bible quote that you just rhymed off, wouldn't that also then apply to the person wanting to pursue plastic surgery for the purpose of vanity?
I agree. There's elements where it's like, why are you doing this? Like, what's your intention here? But you know what? There's something called grace, and God has so much grace for us. And for some people, like I had this nice lady, she was 70. She had a 360 body lift. And she said, she's actually also funny enough, she's also a minister. So we had a lot to talk about. We prayed together. And she said, I just feel so guilty that I did this because it's so vain. And all of a sudden I heard the voice of God say, the damage was already done when you ate the poisoned food that America has. This is giving you some redemption. This is helping you get quality of life. Mm. And, you know, in lesser words, that's what I heard the Lord tell me instantly. And I relayed that to her. And all of a sudden I saw her shoulders relax. And she said, thank you, God, for hearing my worry. And I said, listen, are you able to move around now and go do what you and your husband do, which is preach all over the world? Like, are you able to get on an airplane without pain? Then that's helping your mission. That's helping your life journey. That's helping your purpose. If you are a woman who had liposuction because you just felt really uncomfortable with yourself, are you now more able to stop focusing on your body and focus on your children in the moment instead of being worried about how that your pants fit? Okay, maybe you did it in a way that's a little odd, but you know what? There's redemption in everything. There's grace in everything. There's forgiveness in everything. And there's some women who maybe take it, go in a crazy direction, but then later realize, what was I doing? This was really not what I needed in my life. God will take everything and change it around to reach you in all things. I had a gal who was she was an exotic dancer. She had her second BBL, and she was telling me about her broken heart with her boyfriend being so mean to her all the time. And out of nowhere, and I never shared the gospel. I never shared the Bible. I said nothing. I was just listening to her story. And this was the second session I had with her. And I cried with her because she broke my heart too. So I started crying as well. She's crying. And I walked her to the parking lot because it was getting dark, waiting for her ride to come, and it almost began to rain. And she said, out of nowhere, she said, does God still love me even though I did this? I said, you could never lose the love of God, honey. Never. And you need to love yourself through this. Even though you're feeling shame right now and you're feeling uncomfort, let me tell you something. A lot of that's the anesthesia wearing off. Number two, it's because your body is something you don't recognize right now, but you are not your body. Just give your body some time. But go take care of this first. Take care of this for a while. Go focus on your heart for a minute. And she hugged me goodbye and never saw her again. So even though there's like, wait a minute, if I did this and my body's perfect and I'm perfect, then why do I need to pursue plastic surgery? You know what? Everyone has different reasons for different things. Who are we to judge? We just got to be there to catch them and love them.
I think that is like the perfect way to end the episode too. I think like every single person we talk to, everybody has different paths. I always say to Mark, like one of the most fascinating parts of our job is I get to hear people's wild story. Like this started out with you saying, I did this, then I did this, then I did this. And I remember even stopping you saying, what? Like what's happening here?
No, wait.
but it led to you working with a population of people you never thought you would serve, you know, and being in this industry that you didn't even think you wanted to be in. You didn't even really like, you had no passion for. But now you are helping people. And I think the perfect way to end it being like, who are we to judge, is that every single person does have a place they fit somewhere. And there's something for you to do. And doesn't matter what other people think or whatever. Like, you just listened and you're like, here's an opportunity for me and I'm just going to do it. And I think that's freaking fantastic. And I'm super excited for people to hear this and check out your book. Absolutely. Recovery culture, guys. Recovery culture.
Right on. Thanks for hanging out today. This was good.
I hope the book blesses you. And I have a copy coming your way for your collection, guys. So thank you so much for everything.
Well, thank you.
Right on. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.